From awaytogarden.com and robinhoodradio.com, this is Away to Garden with Margaret Roach, your weekly invitation to dig in and grow.
I had to talk myself off the ledge repeatedly through the last half of July and into early August. The trigger? A garden that looked pooped and a gardener that felt the same. With the right plants and tactical tricks, though, the beds and borders can carry on right through fall. Garden designer Kathy Tracy is here to help us achieve that, but first this message.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
Ready to tune up your garden with a longer view into autumn, with some tweaks now and some long-range plans and planting for coming years? Catherine Tracy of Avant Gardens Retail and Mail Order Nursery in Dartmouth, Massachusetts, also helps clients design and refine their landscapes, creating spaces she describes as intimate but not fussy, like her home garden, using a wide palette of plants. Thanks for coming to the rescue for all of us today, Kathy. How are you?
I'm good. We got a little rain last night, a little. The storms keep passing us by. But I'll take that quarter of inch.
It's interesting because we were likewise very dry all summer, really. And then in the last 10 days, we've gotten like 3 1/4 inches and still coming. We're in the, you know, I can see the bands in the radar where it's missing you and it's hitting me and, you know, whatever, every other town kind of. Yeah.
Well, you can tell that meteorologist to do something to that radar. Because
I'm working on it.
It would be great. Okay. To get a little bit more over
yeah.
here.
Yeah. And I think it's, you know, as I said in the introduction, I mean, it's a long haul out there in the garden, you know. Once you get past that sort of freshness and, oh, it's all so new and fabulous of spring, it gets harder, right?
Well, without the rainfall, the garden gets tired. I mean, there's only so much hand watering can do.
Yeah.
And sprinkler systems cause their own problems with spreading mildew and diseases on plants. So a good rainfall just means the garden has a new lease on life.
Yeah. But even without, I mean, whether or not, even in seasons we have sort of steady precipitation, if that ever happens anymore anywhere, because I'm not clear that it does, you know, some stuff's going to flop and fade and get old and tired, and we have to do some work, and we also have to have the right plants. And I don't really know where to start. Do we start in our conversation today? Do we start in the sort of what should we have started doing when? Because I know some of this we have to backtrack to tell people how they could have a garden that performs all the way through, because, you know, some of it's going to be retrofitting, right?
Sure.
Yeah.
I mean, one thing that we need to remind ourselves to get on top of is cutting back those early spring plants.
Yeah.
Plants like Symphytum. We have Axminster Gold in the garden, and it offers this big, bold, golden green leaf all season long. But if I don't cut it back just about to the ground after it's done flowering, all those flowering shoots, it really looks messy and awful.
Right.
So, and usually the flowers really start to fade and go the end of June. So if you can get out there and hack that plant back and then pay attention to giving those plants a little extra water,
right,
maybe even a little fertilizer like fish emulsion, seaweed, which is what we use, within just a very short space of time, those big bowl leaves reemerge, and they hold up well right through the summer.
Right, and so, yeah, and it depends on, obviously, what you've got in your garden, but that's kind of like a comfrey-ish looking thing, is that right, Symphytum?
Yeah, it attracts all kinds of bees and beneficials, little blue tubular flowers, blue fading to pink, interesting combination. And there's a solid green form, which is equally imposing, but that gold green leaf I especially like for its texture.
So depending on what people have, and so this is where I'm saying, some of the tips we're going to give today and some of the planting ideas for later that we're going to give today in our conversation, people can act on now or, you know, order stuff and, you know, buy stuff and be ready to plant and rethink some areas with some of your suggestions. But some of this stuff, started, like you said, for you and that particular plant late June. For me, I have a lot of euphorbias that come early. I have a lot of perennial geraniums that kind of do their thing by, they finish around the first half of June. They're flowering and they're stretched out and nasty. I'm trying to think what else, you know, that I need to really get after. Otherwise, what I end up with is sort of these floppy, weak, sometimes yellowing, nasty things, right? And that's not a good
right.
late summer garden or fall garden, right?
Right, because even the new perennials that start to come to bloom, the late summer and early fall perennials, when they come into their glory, you don't want something tarnished looking next door to it because it doesn't make the best vignette. So by
right.
getting on top of cutting back those geraniums and brunneras and pulmonarias,
Pulmonarias, that's another good one. Exactly.
Mm,
that's one.
Yeah. Because if you don't cut them back, they just look nasty.
Yeah. And the other thing that this is proactive, and again, for me, you know, because of my palate and my garden, this kind of work starts around the second week of June and in the second half of June and all the way through July, there's always something that needs this treatment. But the other thing that it does that's really good is it sort of makes things a little airier, so when we do get the humid weather and hopefully a little rain, it's not like slug heaven in there with, you know, slugs love a decaying, floppy
sure.
leaf, right?
Yeah.
So
that's what I've been discovering. And, for example, I have these big Baptisia in our garden. They've only been in 4 or 5 years, but they have just exceeded their bounds. And what I do, just so that they don't flop on all the neighbors around, I will, even though the foliage of Baptisia holds up pretty well, I usually trim out some stems around the base, and so it helps hold that plant up and allow a little bit more airflow to get through to the low-lying plants that are, you know, situated nearby.
Oh, so you kind of...
I do a little pruning.
Right. So you're pruning some of your perennials to allow for more room for everybody in the bed to be happier and in better shape for a longer period.
Yeah.
Okay. Oh, good. Okay. So sort of speaking of that, and you're talking about that's a statuesque plant, although not as tall as some of the ones that we're going to mention today, but things can flop not because they're tired or that they were early spring things that are done and need a haircut, like the ones you just mentioned. But things can flop because they're big, tall things. Like I have a lot of big, tall phylicterums that just finished blooming or are blooming now, like Rochebrunianum. I don't even know how you say it, but the really tall phylicterum and a white one that sort of looks like that. I mean, they're like 10 feet tall. Some of the tall composites, the daisy relatives, the sort of sunflower relatives, we get this weather then. We get, you know, wind and storms and woof, they're like flopping all over the place. What should I have been doing? Like, how can
well,
I, you know what I mean? Because a lot of the late stuff is tall.
Yeah.
It's tall stuff.
I know. If neatness is your thing, then staking them early is a good thing to do. I can't say that I'm on top of that myself, though mm-hmm. I know exactly what you're saying, where they just cover or billow over and maybe not in the most aesthetic way. But you can cut them back. Of course, cut those back now, and they will replenish with some new foliage at the base. I know Rochebrunianum does.
Right.
And the tall summer blooming helianthus and rudbeckias, you could prevent them from getting so tall by cutting them back maybe mid to late spring, like early June, giving them a little clip back,
okay.
which might delay flowering a little bit. But
okay.
I do that with some of the aster relatives. I do that with Boltonia, which we may talk about. It's one of the late summer, early fall bloomers that, you know, just adds a freshness to the garden at that time of year.
So some of the, like you're saying, some of the aster relatives, some of the sunflower, composite, daisy, whatever relatives, that you give them a haircut before they've achieved their full stature, so in, like, maybe early June or something, sometime around there.
Right. That way, you know, we're getting the flowers when we're supposed to,
but
late summer.
It's at
a lower
height.
But if we were to cut them back now, mm-hmm. we might not see too many flowers.
No. But it's at a lower overall height. So you're, like, having them around then or something? What do you do?
That's what I don't go too drastic.
Okay.
With the mums, with the perennial chrysanthemums, I'll go right down to 3 to 4 inches. But that's, of course, going to bloom much later. But with plants that perhaps, you know, they're late July, early August blooming, and that's when we want them to bloom, if you cut them back to maybe about a foot, 18 inches, if they've already exceeded that spot, that point in in early mid-June.
Yeah, and, okay. You know, so that's kind of preventive. Now, you just mentioned mums, and you're not talking about the stuff that people cart home from the garden center in the fall that's been sheared and sheared and sheared and kept really tight, you know, like a potted mum. You're not talking about that. You're talking about perennial in the ground plants.
Correct.
Okay.
Yeah.
So talk about those a little bit, because that's both, there's a tactical thing, but these are also plants that maybe people aren't using that can bring them longevity of color in the garden if they invest in them, right?
Right. There's a number of, and a lot of these are old-time varieties that just have persisted
yeah.
in people's gardens, these older chrysanthemums. And, you know, people have this idea that chrysanthemums should grow in little round balls, you know, like you find them at the market,
right.
at the farm stands, and at the supermarket. And what they don't realize is those pans of mums that they're buying are multiple cuttings that were stuck in early midsummer and pinched back numerous times to get that orb-like effect.
Right.
Whereas in the garden, if you don't pinch back mums, they're quite blousy. They kind of flop and billow forth, and that can be a wonderful look. Or if you want to encourage more shoots, which means more flowers, you can shear them back in our area, I would say, up until about the 4th of July.
Mm-hmm.
And shearing them at like just with your clippers or pruners, just take them down to about 3 to 4 inches, and they regenerate with
okay.
multiple new shoots,
okay.
and each one of those new shoots will extend to become more flowers.
Okay.
So it's a good thing to do that, just to encourage more flowering in the garden.
So name a couple of perennial mums that you particularly like. Like, I'm crazy about pink ones. I know that sounds crazy because it's like pink in fall, but I love the color pink against like the fall palette of reds and fiery colors, you know, that nature provides.
Yeah, it's a bit of a surprise. Well, one of the most well-known, I think, is the Sheffield or Sheffield apricot,
yes.
or sometimes people call it Sheffield pink.
Yes,
which
yes.
is a peachy pink daisy.
Yes.
And that one is persisted in my garden ever since I had it, so it's not one that I've ever lost.
Okay.
Another one that I think you've mentioned in your podcast in previous years is that one called Will's Wonderful.
Yes, it's a crazy one.
Yeah, it blooms very late, actually. It blooms more towards the end of October into November, and it doesn't seem to mind the colder nights that we're getting then.
Right.
Then there's others that have been going around. We have one called October Glory, and very, very similarly colored Mary Stoker. And a few years back, one of my gardening clients had some mums in her garden that she shared with me. They were in her grandmother's garden.
Wow.
And their names are not up to date. We don't really know what they were called back then, but I just call them by what they look like. There's a double white one that actually starts blooming in August, and another one that I called old-fashioned pink that really looks like it could have been a pot mum that, you know, you'd buy in the fall and put in the ground to winter over. It's a very double, and it's a pretty shade of pink, like a dusty warm pink.
Oh, that's funny. So you just give them names according to what they look like. That's a good idea when one doesn't know.
I acknowledge this is a made-up name
so
on the
we
catalog.
Say, we say Plantus unknowniensis is the Latin name for that,
yeah.
right?
Yeah.
You know, and for people who are like, what are you talking about? You're cutting back half your plant, like it's grown, you know, 18 inches, and you're like cutting it back to. Well, think about this, though, and this was the time that the light bulb went off for me about shearing like that, you know, in June sometime. Sometimes that's when I have some pests in the garden, some nuisance wildlife, like woodchucks, who in my area love wild violets, for instance, but they also love, you know, the native violets. They also love all the native asters. And so I frequently know when the woodchuck is in the yard, because my asters have been mowed to the ground, you know? You know, in the beds, like the white wood aster, Aster divaricatus.
So the woodchuck's helping you with the pruning.
And the interesting thing is, those asters still bloom. And that was, again, like how the light bulb went off in my head. I was
mm-hmm.
like, oh, wait a minute, that got eaten to the ground, but it still bloomed, and it actually bloomed at a tidier stature.
You like the result.
Yeah. Yes. So I did not like the result's cause.
No. Early on, you're like, oh, no, what's next?
Yeah. So perennial mums are worth investigating, and that can give us more longevity. Tell us about some other, We were talking about tall things. I mean, a number of things I think that you use in your garden are you know, big stature at this time of year also. Any other big guys that we should cover?
Well, there's the Rudbeckias. And everybody knows Volstrom. It's in, you know, all the plantings in all the supermarkets. I mean, it's a great plant. It's very showy and looks good for a long time. There's a few other ones, though, that people should know about. Autumn Sun is Rudbeckia nidida or Lanciniata. The name keeps changing on me, and I forget now what we should be calling it.
And sometimes they use that. Is it a German name or something? Or, I don't know, Herbstosona?
Yeah, Autumn Sun.
I have no idea. I just make up accents. It's fine.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's a great one.
And then there's the Rudbeckia subtomentosa cultivars, Henry Eilers and Little Henry.
Oh, yes.
That has quilled petals, so it's nice as a cut flower. It blooms for a really long time. I'm starting to see buds on mine right now.
Me too.
And
it will
carry on until September, so that's a nice show.
Do you shear that one, or do you let it go to its full extent?
Well, I don't. But I should.
And I was
where I have it, and it, where I have it, it doesn't matter too much. But if you wanted one that would be a little bit more compact, go with Little Henry, because that's more in the 3 to 4 foot range, whereas Henry Eilers gets more of closer to 5 to 6 feet.
Okay. All right. So that's a good one. So any other kind of oddball composite looking, you know, things that...
Well, it's already started to bloom, but it goes on for quite a while. The cup plant, Silphium perfoliatum.
Oh, yes. And that's a prairie native. Yeah, big thing.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, with bold leaves. And then there are all the H plants, the helianthus and the heleniums. And with the helianthus lemon queen, which is a perennial sunflower that spreads. So give it space if you want to try this. It's a good back of the border or wild border plant.
Is that one of the tuberous sunflowers? Is that like from our native, you know, Helianthus tuberosus, or, you know, the Jerusalem artichoke, or is this something else? It's a perennial but not tuberous. I don't know that.
No, it's not a tuberous.
Okay.
It's not a tuberous one.
Okay. Do you grow that Nally's Lime Dots?
I do. I think that's a fun cut flower, and it's such a surprise to see it in the garden.
And tell me, what's the genus and species? Do you know? I'm drawing a blank.
It's Boltonia.
Right.
Asteroides.
Right.
And it's like the snowbank, except without the little white petals fringing the little central disc. And so what you really have is just the central disc. And I believed it was named after somebody... Nally.
It was so indeed. It was named for John Nally, who co-created Wave Hill with Marco Polo Stufano.
I didn't know that.
Yes, in New York City, the very renowned public garden. So John,
I love that garden.
And John died 20-something years ago. So he didn't get necessarily to see, you know, the full fruition of Wave Hill, but he was instrumental in creating. He was an artist. He was very artistic, very special person.
Now I'm going to think of him every time I look at Nally's Lime Dot in bloom.
Exactly. So that's it's a sentimental plant for a lot of people who knew him. So that's sweet. Yeah, John Nally. Yeah. So it's a funny, you just said it. So it's like if people know Boltonia, that's like a little white daisy-ish kind of astery looking thing, but on a taller plant, right?
Right, and that can get quite tall if you don't give it a shearing midsummer, early summer.
And this one has the dots, but it doesn't have the petals, so to speak.
Right.
Yeah, so it's kind
but
of wacky.
But floral arranges love it.
Yeah.
They just can't get enough of it because it just adds that fun. And it's a perennial, of course, so it's not like an annual. You have to plant every year to get that effect from a cut flower.
Right. Any others that you want to recommend?
Besides, we talked a little bit about asters.
Yeah.
There's also the fall anemones where they're happy. You have quite a few because they do spread. Some people tell me they just can't grow it. They just does not like their garden, and so they have much smaller clumps. But they're in shades of white and pink, and they're just so elegant in the garden. It just sort of I'm glad they're happy in my garden because they provide me with a nice show and flowers for cutting.
Now, do you divide those and kind of, because they tend to be a little thuggish, don't they, where they're happy? Don't they kind of spread?
Right. You have to judge and see where you want the boundary to be with them.
Okay.
Sometimes they'll move away from where you really planted them,
right,
and they moved over to their neighbor's spot, and you have to put them back in their place if they start giving you trouble that way.
Okay. Yeah. So, and did you use the ironweeds, like the Vernonias? I know the big guy.
Oh, Vernonia.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, most people are familiar with Vernonia Nova Borisensis, the New York ironweed, native plant,
big.
Great butterfly plant, big, can get very imposing, and that's fine for the wild garden. But there are two forms that are very well-behaved that could make their place in a more cultivated space. And one is the dwarf ironweed, Vernonia lettermanii.
Uh-huh.
It grows to about 2 feet tall. It has foliage resembling Amsonia, this thread-like foliage.
Mm-hmm.
And then in late August and September, it's covered with purple flowers that are magnets for butterflies.
Ah, okay.
And that's one. And now there's a new one on the scene called Southern Cross, which was discovered by Brent Hovarth, who has a perennial nursery in the Midwest.
Yes.
And it's not quite clear what it is a cross of, but definitely lettermanii is in its heritage.
Okay.
And this one is the same purple clusters of flowers at the top, but it gets a bit taller. It's more in the 3-foot range, and I expect that it may get closer to 4 feet in a rich, moist soil.
Okay. So, and I know we have a few minutes left, like 3-4 minutes left, but as I want to run through some more plants, and I have a couple of quick questions to ask you. But so I know you love the Tricertis, the toad lilies, and Lespediza, you and I both share. And this is, I think, a plant that's not grown enough, the so-called bush clover, I think, Lespediza thunbergii.
Oh, Lespediza. Right.
Big, it becomes this, it dies to the ground, but it becomes this big thing with either purple
or
white flowers.
It comes back every year.
Yeah.
Yes.
And you use the Japanese shrub mints, the leucoceptrums also?
The leucoceptrums should be better known. And maybe they are starting to get out there, but they take a little shade, which is nice. There's the all-gold form called Gold Angel.
Yeah.
And that does well for me in a spot where it gets late morning sun to early afternoon. It only gets about 2 or 3 hours of strong sunlight and then diffuse sunlight afterwards. And then there's one that my friend Gary Kohler gave me called Mountain Madness, which has a variegated golden green leaf. And that plant is a monster from a plant that was only about 12 inches in width last spring. It's now taking up about 5 square feet in my garden right now, 5 by 5
here
area.
Here too, dear. Here too.
Yeah.
But I think they're worth looking into. And like with the anemones that we're talking about, the fall anemones, it's like we have to work the perimeter with our shovel and tell them where they can and can't be. You know,
that's it. And sometimes we want a plant that gets big.
Yeah.
Sometimes we want something that's going to take up some space. You know, that means you need fewer of them for one thing.
Yeah, yeah. So
and they bloom late, and the honeybees were all over them last October. They bloom quite late, like late September and early October.
Well, these are some of the great perennials that you're mentioning that are going to help us stretch the season. In our last just quick minute, do you rehab your pots? Because, I mean, and you're like the succulent queen, and you have a lot of succulent pots, but you also have other pots. Do you kind of like pull out wretched-looking stuff or stick in some new things right now to kind of make the pots look good longer too?
Yeah.
Okay.
If you perhaps have a planter and you've used petunia or million bells and maybe it got a little too dry on one of those hot days and you cut them back but they never kicked back in, you can just dig out those sad little plants and tuck something in that, you know, has interest later on in the season.
Yeah.
I mean, you could use perennials. You could use euchras, which we've talked about before as being great container plants because they're going to hold up. Their foliage is going to get even more dramatic. As the fall goes on,
absolutely.
As the nights get cooler, the color intensifies. So that could be one substitute.
Lots of possibilities.
You can use chrysanthemums.
Yes, yes.
I stay away from the little potted asters only because I feel like they don't give you much for very long. It's like a 2 to 3 week stint of color. Then, but there are, you know, the tender perennials that folks forget about. Maybe they discard them because, well, they're not hardy. But I know that for me, Cuffia David Verity with its orange, red-orange flowers continues until hard frost.
That's a good one. Well, I'm going to have to cut you off, and I'm going to have to get you to give me, because we've run out of time, but I'm going to have to get you to give me a list to run with the transcript of the show of some other ideas. But Kathy Tracy of Avant Gardens Nursery, thank you so much, and I'll talk to you soon.
Thanks, Margaret.
Okay.
Underwriting support from Timber Press, your go-to resource for books in gardening and nature. Whether you're a new gardener, a professional at the top of your field, or a reader interested in the wonders of the natural world, their books are there to help you grow. TimberPress.com.
And I'll talk to all the rest of you soon again, too. Now, don't miss an episode. You can subscribe free to the podcast version on Stitcher or iTunes. Find me anytime at awaytogarden.com or Facebook.com/awaytogarden or Instagram, awaytogarden. And happy gardening meantime.
A Way to Garden with Margaret Roach is a joint production of awaytogarden.com and the smallest NPR station in the nation, Robin Hood Radio.